It's time for BK's Bullets!
Hey everybody, Bricaceta back again with another edition of BK's Bullets to kind of tide you guys over. You know, comic timing has been, we've just been erratic with our releases. And I did something which I liked a few weeks ago, I reread some stuff over Christmas break and wanted to talk about it. I figured, hey, you know, that'd make a nice quick BK's Bullets. So I recorded those, two at a time, put them out in between episodes, and I really think the system works out pretty good. So, and I'm kind of in that same kick where I'm rereading a lot of my collection in long, extended runs. So if you guys get a couple more of these, you know, for the next couple months, before some things start to pick up, then, hey, awesome. You guys are getting more than one episode out of our feed a month, or two. We're actually shooting for two or three, but... you know, this will kind of make up for these 30-minute or 15-minute chunks here. So, anyway, back to the topic at hand. What are we going to talk about today? Today we're going to talk about Detective Comics. And I'm not talking Batwoman. Not mainly. I want to talk about Paul Dini on Detective Comics. Because his is a run that I thought was really underappreciated once it kind of got underway. So we're talking about Detective Comics number 820, all the way through the Batwoman stuff, which is, 853 or something like that. So if you got these books, awesome. If you don't, awesome. If you have some of them, awesome. But if you don't have them or you want to know a little bit more about it, maybe you've just been reading the Grant Morrison stuff and kind of threw that aside because you said, you know, these are one-and-done stories, I don't have to pay attention to them. And hopefully you'll listen to mine and kind of, I'll tell you some kind of ones you can kind of pick up and get a feel for and see if you'll like the whole thing. But, so let's kick it off here. Detective Comics 821. This is the one that grabbed the most attention, I think. Well, not the most, but one of the more significant issues in the run because it was the first issue. Got a lot of attention. It was the first issue, after the one-year-later reboot stuff, not to bear that logo. So this is after James Robinson jumped off the title. Got J.H. Williams II on art, coincidentally. So that's kind of interesting. Introduces a new villain, Facade, and he's kind of going robbing around the socialites, the well-to-do in Gotham City. And this is kind of the first place we see J.H. Williams, or the first place that I saw him, actually, as an artist, and kind of do those weird kick-ass layouts he does. You know, actually, the second and third issues in this book, probably find them online. There are preview pages for a while. It's Batman swinging across on a cable, kicking people in the face, and there's like a splash. There's like an effect around this guy's face, and rather than make him look like it's hurt, they actually take the color image and black it out, make it black and white. So it's kind of draws your eye to the kick to the face. It was really cool. And then I think, I want to say it's done in almost a bat symbol kind of thing, what he's doing with Batwoman now. So really, kind of where I first took notice of him. And then later on, he's also doing, in this issue in 821, the same stuff he's doing in with Batwoman right now, where he's switching styles. He's got the more painted look for Batman, rendering all the different, the cloak and stuff and the heavy inks. And then when it's just regular Bruce Wayne doing his detective stuff, it's kind of more a laid-back approach with muted colors and kind of simple line work. So that was really a standout issue because it was, the art, number one, probably primarily, but because it was a really well-written issue done by Paul Dini of Batman Animated Series fame. Also the guy, I think, that helped create Harlequin for us. If you didn't know, Harlequin was actually created for the animated series and then kind of made her way into the comics later on. So she's not really been around that long in the comics, I don't think. So kind of a neat addition. Thank you, Paul Dini, there. But let's go on with the run. So 821 was cool, just for J.H. Williams' art. 822 we got to take note of because it's the first issue with Don Kramer, who's kind of one of the two ongoing artists on this book. And at first, I believe J.H. Williams... No, when they first announced this, it was supposed to be Rags Morales doing these these one and done issues with Paul Dini, and I was like, okay, awesome, great, I love Rags Morales. Identity Crisis is awesome. I don't know what happened. That never happened. Rags Morales does not appear in this run. Sad to say, couldn't even do one issue. But that's because they found, you know, and then they started going, you know, we'll get different artists on each one shot because they're not connected. Well, it's kind of different later on. I'll get into that, but you know, they got Don Kramer on the second one, 822, which is significant for, you know, his start on the book, as well as the introduction of Riddler, the way we know him in the last few years, as not a villain, but a private detective. And this is the Riddler coming out of Batman Hush and Return of Hush, which is the trade paperback with the Lee Bermejo cover with Batman on the gargoyle, kind of looking all badass. That Return of Hush is actually taken from Streets of Gotham, or not Streets of Gotham, a kid. Getting confused. Gotham Knights series that was out a little while ago. That trade's okay. I read that in the trade and kind of thought it was an okay storyline. They're kind of trying to pick up the things that Jeff Loeb did, but really didn't catch my eye. But that series uses Hush later on into the end of its run and just kind of leaves you with a whimper. But it's something you can check out if you really want to, but it's nothing really of note for the character, I thought. But anyway, the Riddler actually grabbed me in this issue because, you know, it's a new status quo for the Riddler, and apparently he doesn't remember anything about Bruce being Bruce Wayne. Somehow, dramatically, I don't remember what happened to him. The last time I saw him, you know, when I read this book, was at the end of the Hush storyline, which is in floppies, two hardcovers, two trades, one trade, an absolute edition. It's basically been collected any which way you can imagine. So if you haven't read that, go pick it up. It's definitely worth your read. But the Joker as a private eye was, or not Joker, the Riddler as a private eye was actually really interesting. So that's, you know, that's a standout issue. It's the beginning of kind of what's going on. We have the introduction of a character named Matthew Atkins, who really not that important other than a name, and a name he mentions of his old girlfriend Peyton Riley, who we'll get to later on, and you'll kind of see where I'm going with this as we go on to it. The next issue was art by Joe Benitez, Poison Ivy story, one and done, kind of cool. Art was radically different from the first two issues of Paul Dini's run, but a nice story. Next one, 824, Return of Don Kramer. Penguin, we see the new Iceberg Lounge, so that's neat. 825, Dr. Phosphorus returns. I forget who does the art and the writing, but it's a fill-in. The next one that you need to take note of, though, is Detective Comics 826. It's called Sleigh Ride. Don Kramer on art, Paul Dini on writing, of course, you know. But this is the one that I think got the most attention after the run started. And then, you know, once this issue passed, people started, we're still talking about this issue a couple months later, but they never really did return to talk about Detective Comics or Paul Dini's run as a whole, you know, up until Heart of Hush and stuff like that. So, but the reason why this issue is so cool is because it features the Joker as a kind of, you know, as the, you know, laughable maniac that we love him, that we, you know, all know him to be. This is your Jack Nicholson and Batman Animated Series and Dark Knight Joker, you know, Heath Ledger, all rolled into one, basically, is the way I read this more recently. But, you know, it's a little more, it's, you know, this is the classic Joker we all know and love. It's not the new Grant Morrison, weird, skinny, emo Joker with cuts in his face and wearing a white robe. That's just kind of weird. I prefer this version. It's a lot scarier as the deranged clown than the asylum patient. But what's great about this issue is that, you know, Robin inadvertently climbs into the Joker's car, who's dressed in a Santa hat, driving around on Christmas or Christmas Eve, and is killing people by running them over, forwards and backwards and back again. Going through drive-thrus, making ridiculous orders, and then when they don't get him right, he's shooting the manager. Just a fun time had by all. Well-written tale. Felt like in a great episode of the animated series, which, you know, all of these best issues by Paul Dini do, simply because he was a writer on that show. But probably one of these standout issues of the run. So if there's one, I would say that if there's one issue that you need to read out of this run, it's this one, Detective Comics 826. If that's the only one you want to read, that's fine. You'll understand why I love this run. Now, moving on, we kind of get the introduction in the next issue, in 827, of the new ventriloquist. If you recall, back in James Robinson's face-to-face storyline, Arnold Wesker was shot. So we're like, okay, that's the end of Ventriloquist. Goodbye, Scarface. You were a dumb villain. You know, moving on, awesome kill. But actually, Scarface returns, and it turns out that the new Ventriloquist is a girl. Kind of got the Jessica Rabbit look with a red dress, long blonde hair over the face. Really cool introduction to the character here. And she is pretty significant as we go on in this run, and I'll get to it later. I just want to point out 829 and 830 is the two-parter with the Andy Clark art written by Stuart Moore. It's the two-parter where some terrorist takes over Wayne Tower. Batman is, you know, he's busy doing his Bruce Wayne duties, so he's kind of rely on Robin kind of to take a hold of things up until, you know, Bruce actually has to step in. Really nice, tight two-parter. You know, really cool. You know, 831, I just want to touch on it for a quick second. Harlequin gets freed from Arkham Asylum. Really nice one-and-done storyline. Like, feels like the episode of the animated series where Harley goes shopping and is kind of being hounded for being insane. On the flip side, she's trying to be free, but she's insane. So, it's really neat. And the next two that I want you to take note of is Detective Comics 833 and 834. I'm just, you know, yelling these out so you don't know. Well, okay, well, they're not all in order. There are some fill-ins here and there in this run. Some of them are good, some of them are okay. But I'll tell you the ones that are good, which is mainly just the Stuart Moore ones with Andy Clark art and the Dr. Phosphorus one, 825. But 833 and 834 is a two-parter featuring Satana and the Joker. And I might have given away to reveal, but it's in the first issue, so don't worry about it. But what's really cool is that this is the first issue where you kind of got a feeling that, you know, these issues are connected. You know, in one of the earlier issues with Don Kramer art, you know, I can't recall which one right now, but there was a mention of a magician named, I think his name was Victor Loxius. And he got kidnapped, and Batman saved him. And he just said right there and then, you know, hey, this is cool. I want to be kidnapped again. I want to get in touch with Gotham's dark side and see what it's like. And these two issues is where that character returns. But with a huge, huge twist at the end of the first issue that you're going to love. As well as, you know, having Zatanna. And, you know, Paul Dini writing Zatanna, how much better can you get? As well as all the added pressure and stuff from Zatanna mind-wiping Batman, which was still fresh on people's minds at the time. So, you know, all that is going on in this issue. It's, you know, these two issues, 833 and 834, just a great, great two-parter. And, you know, really great thing. Next couple issues are kind of, you know, good. Some two are fill-ins. One's a countdown thing where Riddler goes to an Amazon shelter and finds Harlequin. Batman really doesn't appear in it. Don Kramer art, still good, but not really something you need to take note of. Then we got the Resurrection of Ra's al Ghul here. Don Kramer is on those issues of Nightwing and not of Detective Comics, so take note of those if you want to check those out. Really kind of fun crossover, spearheaded by Paul Dini, so check those out. Alright, so after the Resurrection Ra's al Ghul crossover, we got a change in artists. We get the continuous run of Dustin Nguyen, who is currently doing Streets of Gotham with Paul Dini. So these guys are a really good team, if you haven't figured that out by now. They've been together for, you know, at least 2 years, I want to say. You know, probably going on more than that, 2.5, 3. So they must really like each other, and I like them working together because these issues are freaking fantastic. 840 is the first issue with Dustin Nguyen art, and it's kind of, you know, it's you first pick it up, it's Batman and ninjas. You don't know what's going on. And then Ra's al Ghul shows up. And you're like, wait a minute, didn't I just finish a crossover with this asshole? And then it's kind of a weird issue because Batman takes down Ra's and puts him in Arkham Asylum, drugs him up, and says, you're going to be here for a good long time. And I want to say he was, because it's not until recent issues of Red Robin that we've really seen the real Ra's al Ghul. He was in Green Arrow Black Canary for a little while, but it wasn't really him, so that's kind of interesting, because we've seen Talia after that, you know, or up until this point with Ra's al Ghul, so just kind of weird that they just resurrected him and threw him in asylum for a little while. It's just awkward. The next issue to take note in this run is 843. And this is the next issue, 843 and 844. This is the next issue in the Ventriloquist saga, as I like to call it. You know, we get to see the Ventriloquist again, the girl, red dress, blonde hair, beautiful girl, drawn by Dustin Nguyen, even a cooler rendition of what Don Kramer did. His Scarface is just creepy in these issues. But also of note, because it features, you know, the other favorite characters from this run we like. Batman, of course, and Zatanna. Another two-parter with Zatanna. You know, not even 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You know, not even 8 months after the last one's pretty frequent. So she makes an appearance, you know, and makes for a great story, actually. And, you know, this is kind of where we get the origin of the new Ventriloquist. And you may remember me talking about a guy named Matthew Atkins early on in this episode of BK's Bullets. And Matthew Atkins, if you remember, had a girlfriend named, and her name was, you guys are lost, Peyton Riley, right? She was just a throwaway name in the first issue or two, in the first issue with Don Kramer art, so the second issue of this run, actually. And Matt Atkins was the girlfriend, you know, that was his girlfriend at the time or something, and... But she was from, you know, a crime family, basically. She's the daughter of a crime boss, so whatever, dumped her. She was a throwaway line. And then you get to this issue, or these two issues, 843 and 844, and you find out that Peyton Riley is actually a character to take notice of, because she's actually the new Ventriloquist. As I said, she's the daughter of some old crime boss whom I can't recall, but she was dating this other crime guy, and then once she goes crazy and gets possessed by the Scarface dummy. However that works, she decides to take her revenge on Sabatino, the guy she was dating, who's also competing for the Penguin's Iceberg Lounge. He creates a lounge where it's a volcano, rather than an iceberg. Convenient. Zatanna's performing there to open the lounge up, so that's where she comes in. But just a really cool story, and a really kind of... you know, another piece where things kind of come together for Paul Dini. You know, these aren't just one-and-done stories. They're connected. They have some continuity to them. You don't need to read all of them to know what's going on in any given issue. And you can just pick up one issue or two issues of a two-parter and figure out what's going on pretty quick and enjoy them and put it down, set aside, and move on to something else if you want. But that's the kind of cool thing about this series is that, you know, you can pick up an issue, love it, put it down, not come back for another 8 months, pick up an issue, go, hey, I remember her, and then go, oh my goodness, you know. So that's kind of cool. And oh my goodness, you know, just 2 months later when Hush comes in the Heart of Hush storyline, which is a Batman RIP crossover, 5 issues. Really, really nice storyline. First time Paul Dini did a long, extended storyline by himself. I'll put it that way. He did Spearhead Countdown, but I'm not going to place all the blame on that catastrophe for him. You know, I'm not going to put it all on Paul Dini, so we'll cut him some slack there. So Heart of Hush kind of really returns the Hush storyline to, you know, its logical place after Batman Hush with Jeff Lee. Really, you can read that, read this, and go, okay, awesome. You know. But it's cool because it gives you the actual origin of Hush, which you didn't get in the first time he appeared. You get the story of Tommy Elliott, who is Hush, and kind of his history. He was, you know, Bruce Wayne's kid, friend growing up, also son of a wealthy couple. But it's kind of if Bruce Wayne was evil when he was a little kid, because Tommy Elliot cuts the brake lines on his parents' car when they drive out one day, hopes to kill them both and be rid of them, because his dad hits him and beats him, you know, and then his mom smothers him. So, you know, kind of protecting her child after the fact, and not not protecting him from his father, but just after the fact. So that's kind of weird. But, you know, so we're kind of following Catwoman and Batman and her story as this goes through. And, you know, Hush cuts out Catwoman's heart at one point and trying to save Catwoman. But we're also learning a lot about Hush in this storyline. And so he kind of grows up. His mom smothers him in a wheelchair. He's kind of kept from doing what he wants and leaving the nest because he has to take care of his mother until he meets a young woman at a party. And this young woman is a daughter of a prominent crime boss at the time. And, you know, they wanted to announce their engagement to their mom, and then the mom rips her apart. Actually, says she's going to cut off Tommy Elliot. You know, you're out of the family. You're not my son anymore because you're dating this trash kind of thing. And then this daughter of a wealthy crime boss helps kill Tommy Elliot's mom before, you know, things can go wrong and him actually be cut off legally from the will and stuff like that. And you're going, okay, what's this girl's name if she's so important? Remember what I was talking about with Matthew Atkins? Daughter of a prominent crime boss? Peyton Riley, you're right. You got it right this time. You caught my theory, or you caught my my theme here. Peyton Riley! The girl that was a throwaway line in the first two issues of this run comes back as the ventriloquist that you find out, you know, two issues ago that, you know, she's a recurring character. She's been, like, probably the main character other than Batman in this whole detective run. We see her go from, you know, in different spots, not in chronological order, but we see her go from, you know, socialite to psychopath when we don't know her name to psychopath when, you know, the last two-parter with Satana, where we find out her name and her origin. And then we come here and find out that she wasn't a good girl to begin with. It's just a really cool arc for her character. And it makes me want to see this new ventriloquist more, because now that I've read all these issues in a row, I can't wait to see this ventriloquist show up again. Especially at Paul Dini's hands. So I hope she shows up in Streets of Gotham coming up. One can only hope, because she's dealt with Bruce Wayne and not really Dick and Rob and Damian, so that should be interesting if she indeed does pop up. But and then the last two issues that Paul Dini does in Detective is Detective 852, and then the issue of Batman also ties into that during the Faces of Evil month. Both of them have art done by Dustin Nguyen, and it's a nice two-parter epilogue to the Heart of Hush storyline. It's Catwoman taking her revenge on Hush, who now looks like Bruce Wayne. If you're not reading Streets of Gotham, that's where that's going on right now. So that's another interesting thing. So just a really nice run that's underappreciated, I think. So go check these issues out. Pick up the Joker issue 826. Pick up the Zatanna two-parters. Pick up Heart of Hush, or you can just pick up all the Paul Dini trades. That would do you good too, so can't go wrong there. And then Batwoman jumps on with 854, Greg Rucka, G.H. Williams II, and then as well as Cully Hamner on art for the Question backup. And I thought this run was longer. Actually, it's been going on for almost a year, coming up in March, and we've had 7 issues, so it's kind of a little disheartening. But I understand J.H. Williams is a master. He's doing some fantastic stuff. So it's well worth the wait anytime an issue of this book comes out. But I will have to say that, you know, these 7 issues read really well together. And I hope that when the trade comes out, it's just these 7 issues. They'll make a nice chunk. But also check out the Question backups here. Read them all in a row. It really helps things out a lot. Because reading it month to month over the last 10 months or so, these 7 issues, you're kind of left going, I don't really remember what happened last time. But reading them all together really helps out a lot, so check those out. So So I hope you enjoyed my little BK's Bullets, and I'll see you next time on Comic Timing.